listening to Fox Sports Radio.
We go to the NFL to start off with first, and the news is out of Dallas/Oxnard regarding Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys. Reportedly, Zeke was not on the plane to Oxnard to go to Cowboys training camp with the majority of Cowboys coaches and players. He asked until Friday in the morning, or else they are considered late, and that could fines could incur, and so on and so forth. But that being said, no Zeke as of right now. What does Vegas make of the situation in Dallas?
Well, I tell you, I see the next week we're going to do a travel log. We did this with Kawhi, where they were tracking Kawhi's movements. We think he got a coffee, that kind of stuff. And the fact of the matter is, wow, it sounds like four planes just flew overhead. A lot of action in Vegas, I'll tell you that much. So to me, it really strikes me that the NFL, the teams, got a decision to make. Because what is different about Zeke is he's 2 years before the contract is up. If you count the team option, which the team often almost certainly would take with a guy as good as Zeke. So the question becomes, if players start to hold out 2 years before the contracts are up, where does it end? Right? Like anything else, is it 2.5 years, 3 years? What, really, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, open question, impress me. When is the last time a player that the team had his rights for 2 years? Zeke has not played a single game in which he could have gotten a contract. Remember, now in this case, you might say, well, RJ, you said, what about 3 years? It wouldn't have been legal to sign a contract before, near time now, whereas, okay, there's 2 years left, the league lets you sign him. But if a player won't play a single game under the old contract before he's allowed to get a new contract, and once he is, he won't play a single game, then the players have gone as far as they can go, at least on a rookie deal. Where does it end? I mean, do we see that the league needs to decide, are we just going to renegotiate these early and that's just business as usual? Or do they got to take a stand here?
Jonas, you fire first.
I think the situation with Zeke is unique one. It's why Carson Wentz was the guy who signed his contract first. Carson Wentz signed the deal, and it's because this year, this offseason, was the time that he was allowed to go ahead and sign it first. So I think everybody assumed once this year hit, we're going to start making moves. I just still don't understand the strategy. If you want a new contract and you've got off-field issues, at least show them you're dependable and then start asking for money.
But how do you put any if you're Zeke, given the givens of his history, how do you put any pressure on the Cowboys?
I mean,
let me ask, it's really his only move. What does showing up to training camp show the Cowboys about his off the field issues? It doesn't show anything.
I think some commitment
for these next 5 weeks. This is his leverage right now. And by the way, on the narrative of the whole league can start holding out after 3 years, this guy is totally unique, as Jonas said.
Totally unique.
He absolutely
is. He's a really good running back.
The rare running back comes into the NFL and is going to fire up 4,000, 4,500 yards combined, rushing and receiving in his first 3 years.
Todd Gurley, before his health issues, would he have been in this rare category?
Sure.
Le'Veon Bell?
Sure.
Okay, so at what point does it stop being rare?
Named two of the top three running backs in the NFL.
That's the point. So what we're assuming is if you draft a running back in the first round,
right,
and he ends up busting, well, you pay him everything he's supposed to get. If he doesn't bust, then assume that 5-year commitment is three, really.
I think the only guys who fall.
So you're avoiding that question.
No, I'm just going to follow up by saying the only guys who fall under this header are quarterbacks who are awesome from the get-go, and running backs who are great. And I don't think receivers can use this leverage. I don't think defensive end, sack masters can use this. These are the only two positions, and I barely believe in the running back having the leverage. This is the rare guy because we'll get to Melvin Gordon.
Well, we just named a couple of others.
Right, they're two of the top three running backs along with Zeke in the National Football League.
So you're saying that in any given year, the best back drafted that year or maybe the second best.
We got to use a qualifier there because running backs aren't being drafted like they used to in the top 10. So now,
well, remember, now that was the story 5 years ago. And what's happened? Zeke and Fournette's been drafted in the top, what, five since then?
Fournette was number eight.
And, oh, is that it?
And, okay. And he has flamed out because one, his production is down.
So
and
he'll accept the 5 years.
Well, he has no choice at all. Even you have to produce. This is next level production when you come in the league and go 4,000 plus in 3 years.
Now, I should say this. Of all of the players don't really care about their agreements type complaints that I have, and there's many, I think the NFL running back is the least egregious. Or maybe said another way, I can see the point. Because if you have 5 years, especially if you're a first-round pick, fifth-year team option, then a tag year, however they tag them, now the guy is going to be 27 almost. And now the question becomes, who signs someone at 27? When's the last big deal we've seen for a running back other than Gurley? Which actually, if you want to talk about a cautionary tale, remember Gurley, correct me if I'm wrong, was at the exact same point entering his fourth season, and he was a first round pick also, as where Zeke is now. So literally the Rams did exactly what the Cowboys aren't doing.
Yeah.
And how much would they love that one back? Meaning if you got 2 years left on the guy, let's see what happens to him.
To me, each year gets worse for the running back. Because more and more of the league, like if you want to use Le'Veon Bell as the example, oh, he won out, right? A lot of people think he lost. He won out. The Jets paid him. How many other offers were on the table for that kind of money? Maybe two or three more. And then the Jets pay him.
It's like getting married, Steve. You only need one person.
You kind of need two to have a little bit of leverage in terms of not to get married.
Yeah.
to get the contract, because the team that's signing him, unless they're complete morons, has to believe someone else is going to pay you as well. But I think it's
so. Who was going to pay Anthony Davis? Who was trading that much for Anthony Davis?
That's a good question. I think they had the Lakers over a barrel the entire time. But remember with the Jets, McCagnan signs him, he gets fired, and then Gase readily admits, he's like, yeah, I wouldn't have done that deal. So even the team that signed him admits that, well, it really wasn't a great deal. So the running backs are in a really weird position now, like you mentioned, with a franchise tag or two after 5 years, then you're 27, 28 years old. I think the league pretty much across the board is not going to freak out and give these guys $9, $12, $14 million a year and those $30 million bonuses.
Okay, so they're not going to give the guys you're talking about the second contract for running backs. So what's the solution? Because here's what I know. Odds are Zeke is going to be the best running back of his era if you say, and let me define this now, if you say from his rookie year till, let's say, he's 27 years old, if you just look at his production, I think anyone, when he's sitting there at 27, he'll have the best production of anyone in his class, maybe even anyone 1 year ahead, 1 year behind. So
yeah.
if you're the NFL, which is one of the most profitable sports in the world, billions, and you're in a situation where you're one of the best, if not the best, during your time period, that's Zeke in this case, and you don't come away with generational wealth, something's wrong. And to me, all the talk about, oh, NBA players, 40-some million, but I'm getting this, I'm getting that. Come on, this is economics. How many games do you play? How much, meaning the sport itself, how much does each game make, right? How big's the TV contract? How many players, how many ways does the pie have to be split? So you got 16 games and 50 some players on the team in football. In basketball, you got 82 and 12, 15 players on the team. The economics are just different. But even amongst football economics, NFL economics, the best running back, which you just acted like is the second most valuable position, Cofield, maybe it's the fifth these days. You could make the case receivers more important. You can make the case that a rush end might be more important. And maybe a cover corner, but then you're done. So it's somewhere between 2 and 5 position value running back. If you're the best of your generation, shouldn't you have generational wealth? So I don't like people breaking agreements, but boy, if there's any case where it feels sort of justified, it's elite NFL running backs that have a 50-year team option.
Isn't part of Zeke's leverage also who his quarterback is? Because if you had an all-pro back there with no questions and no doubts and no limitations, look what the Steelers did with Le'Veon Bell. They were okay letting him walk because of who their quarterback and who their passing game is. And I think in a weird way, part of Zeke's leverage is who Dallas's quarterback is.
Is it just that? Because if that's the case, then any money that Zeke wanted should be coming out of Dax, meaning Dax trying to act like he wants to get paid like Aaron Rodgers in his prime. If he's not Aaron Rodgers in his prime, he shouldn't need Zeke all that bad, as you said. But since we all know he's not Aaron Rodgers, Dak isn't in his prime, then, hey, take $5 million, $8 million a year from Dak, give it to Zeke, everyone's happy. But it seems like both, neither of them, Dak or Zeke, feel like that they're deficient in any way. And listen, over all of this is Jerry Jones and his mortality. When you get to be a certain age, and luckily I'm not that age yet, I hope to get there, as they say. What is he? He's like mid-70s, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
And we are joined by one of the legends in Las Vegas radio. I mean, out of Vegas, not very well known.
You think you're big time?
Well, it's Steve Cofield. The hot take, hot shot. Yeah, let's get to Adrian Peterson. I think there's two ways to look at this story. So, Jonas, give us kind of the bare bones.
According to a source, apparently he has trusted the wrong people coming up throughout the course of his career, and he's deep in debt after making about $100 million over the course of his career.
I got to be honest, I feel sorry for anyone. And almost like where I start to feel sympathetic that Zeke might not have generational wealth, even though he deserves it as the, you know, one of the best running backs of his generation. I mean, let's be honest. I get the whole pull up by your bootstrap guys are going to say, well, you should have done this. You should have done that. Read this book. You should have went to college. You should have went to class there in Oklahoma. Okay. These kids are, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20. Their whole lives, they're treated like they're like, you know, demigods. Like, they're not human. They're above it all. The girls, imagine Adrian Peterson and the girls. Or player XYZ. Come on. And now you're going to say, but you better learn those tough lessons. Now, the next thing you might say is, yeah, but get people you trust. Well, listen, in business, there's a concept called a black box. Now, what does that mean? It means even if you're a very smart CEO, the guy that's supposed to be overseeing things, there's certain things that are so technical, they're in a black box. You can't see in. You just got to trust whoever it is that does the stuff in the black box. How in the heck could any athlete, even if you have a business degree, I've got a finance degree, could I follow accounting tricks that someone, if I had a guy doing my accounting that had a right to write checks off my account, I'm telling you I could get duped. So unless I spent 10 hours a week looking through the books, which means I'm not making any money. So to me, what the leagues need to do is they got to make it mandatory that you want to be part of this league, you got to take this class. The league should provide auditors. Imagine, how much would that cost? It wouldn't cost that much. Take $5 million, get 50 auditors, and all they do is go from player to player, seeing the way their finances are set up. Now, the player can do whatever they want, but at least the league's there to help them. Cofield, thoughts?
I don't know that that would be the easiest thing to get by the players, because I think the general distrust when they actually negotiate contracts would have me thinking as a player, oh, now the owner knows exactly what I have, where I make mistakes, they can take advantage of that.
But which way would it go? Meaning, let's assume there's two extremes, right? Extreme number one is this guy's richer than you thought. He bought a bunch of In-N-Out Burgers franchises, and he's rocking and rolling, animal style. And then over on the other side is this guy's, you know, broke. He's got negative net value.
What do you think is more common?
I mean,
that the athlete probably has less money than you thought, And my worry would be, as a player, I don't want the owner then trying to prey on my weakness because I don't have that much money.
But is that weakness? Or is that a sign that, hey, this guy needs it. He's not being greedy. Maybe they're more sympathetic to it.
Wow.
Right?
Altruistic owners, huh? Billionaires?
Well, no. But when we're talking about do we really play hardball with this guy or not, it's usually gray. Because if it's obvious, there's no ring in your hands, right? Jerry Jones could come out right now and say, Zeke will not be signed before this time next year over my dead body. And now what's going to happen? Zeke's going to have to decide what he has to do. The fact they're not saying that means the area, it's not a clear answer.
Can I jump in and say one more thing about the negativity from fans who look at Adrian Peterson and laugh at him? How much of this country actually has a credit score above like 600, right?
Yeah.
And how many celebrities do we know? Are you a Billy Joel guy?
I very peripherally. Piano Man's good.
But just got destroyed in the middle of his career financially. So to your point, it can happen to anyone.
Well, first of all,
to beat up Adrian Peterson is silly.
And for anyone out there that's in a situation that they have that much money that doesn't feel like they have a great feel for it, the two things you got to do is have two people running it that they are not allowed to talk to each other. One looks at the books and the other one does X and one does oversee. What I'm saying the league should do for the players, if they want it, should be the same thing you should do. In The Godfather, and we love to quote The Godfather here, in The Godfather, he didn't let his two capo regimes, Tessio and Clemenza, were not allowed talking to each other out of his presence. Literally, if he would see them having one word, they both would die. Huh. Why? Because he understood how are you going to have a rebellion from below is if they're teaming up. Mm-hmm. You have your two guys and or gals. They don't talk to each other. You have a much better chance of not getting ripped off.
But I'm a superstitious man.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
I'm RJ Bell. We're Straight Out of Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of You, the Fan, a former Super Bowl champion, or former Seattle Seahawks / Super Bowl champion. Earl Thomas was discussing his infamous moment in which he gave the middle finger to the Seattle Seahawks sidelines as a member of the Seahawks upon going down with an injury and being taken off on a cart. And he said to Josina Anderson of ESPN, he did not regret his decision. He did it because he felt like Pete Carroll, head coach of the Seahawks, was not being honest with him.
And did they go into detail about where the dishonesty supposedly lied?
They didn't. No, he didn't say specifically. He just felt like he wasn't being honest with him.
Yeah, to me, this feels a lot like the Kevin Durant situation that admittingly from the outside, we don't know. It's like a marriage. Oh, they seem to have a good marriage. It's like, you know, anyone's been married understands you don't know about a marriage until if you're one of the two people. That said, I think in general, when someone seems to do a lot of good things, nice things, considerate things, when I look at Steph Curry, I don't know. He could be doing horrible things behind the scenes. But from the outside, I look at Steph Curry and I think, oh, that's a good guy, right? Look at Kevin Durant, I'm not as sure, right? Well, it seems like Golden State tried really hard to keep Durant happy, and he leaves, and he's kicking him out, you know, literally kicking him as he goes out the door. And now I know that Earl Thomas was paid a lot of money, right? And I also know that the Seahawks have a reputation. Pete Carroll's a player's coach. So I don't really know the details, but it strikes me it's a continuation of all this money, all this fame, and you might say, well, RJ, they deserve it. They earned it. Yeah, did they? Or is it a situation that they're lucky that they're this good at football because there's guys that are just as good at archery that have to work at Kinko's to make a living?
You nailed the narrative. Durant possibly mad at the organization and the doctors. Different here because Pete Carroll is the guy, as you said, is known as a player's coach. You wonder if this is actually his reputation around the league, that he's kind of a snake and not as good to the players as we all were led to believe.
That would come out. And we got less than 1 minute. I want to do one thing here. Yeah. Get your thoughts real quick, Cofield, on this Pac-12 situation. 30 seconds.
So Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott mentioned, hey, we might consider 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. starts local time.
So 9 a.m. Pacific.
For football games.
And the theory is that doesn't make sense. Wow.
Every time I call a game, you call it a business. And every time I call a business, you call it a game.
What is college football? College football is a business. College football is a TV show. NFL, TV show. Well, there might be a question, though. Wait a minute. If it's a business, why aren't the college players being paid? And you're right. That's egregious. And I also think if we can fix that, the players won't feel so aggrieved when they do get to the league and maybe start to honor contracts. But right now, it's a business, regardless if the college players get paid or not.
The Odd Couple is next here on many of these Fox Sports Radio affiliates. We are straight out of Vegas. Back tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.